get this in gallery view so I'm not staring at my face.
My name's Taylor, and I'm an alcoholic.
Let me get this in gallery view so I'm not staring at my face.
Chris, I really appreciate you asking me to be here. It's kind of one of those things when Chris Gates calls me and asks me to do something, it's really hard to say no. You're a very important part of my journey in recovery, and a very important part of a lot of people's journey that are big parts of my life in this town and in others. So thank you for that. I want to start off by saying that just being honest, that I don't really want to be here and I don't really want to do this. And that's weird because when I first got sober, I was like constantly angry that people weren't asking me to tell my story. You know, I just wanted people to know everything about me. I wanted the attention. I wanted to sit up front. I wanted you to know all about me because I'm fucking special and I'm unique and you should know. And I don't want that right now. Like I'm fearful right now because I really don't know what to say to fill 40 minutes, but I'll probably figure it out. But I just don't want to talk about myself for 40 minutes. And that's a very different place, than I was when I started this, journey. I took my last drink on March 11th, 2012. So that was a little more than 8 years ago. I'm 38. I was 29, about to be 30. When that happened, and I'll start off a little bit. You know, sometimes I like it when people share about their childhood, and sometimes I'm like, what does it have to do with anything? But I think it has a lot. I grew up in Midland, Texas. It is now, it was then, and probably always will be one of my least favorite places on the planet. And I've been to a lot of places. There is not a place that I could describe that is more the opposite of who I am as a person than Midland, Texas. I grew up, in a broken home, raised by a single father who was an alcoholic, whose entire family were alcoholics, and he was struggling to stay sober when I was a kid. I was the kid that got brought to the AA clubhouse, the 710 club. In Midland, I picked up cigarette butts and got the job of counting the change in the jar that got passed around the basket, which was my favorite job. And I would sit in the back and listen to people cuss and rant and rave and smoke cigarettes and talk about alcoholism. And I remember just always thinking about AA as like a place that I would never go, that was not for me. I had a very big judgment against Alcoholics Anonymous. One, because it took my father away when I was young. He spent more time at meetings than he did with me, because that's what he needed to do. And later in life, I thought that it was a sign that he was a weak man and that he couldn't figure out his own problems and that he needed something else. We'll get to that later. My childhood was relatively easy, but constantly terrifying. You know, I never really wanted for much. We did not have money, but we were fine and we were safe. But I have no memories of my childhood not being afraid and feeling like I was not okay, that I did not fit in the room, that you were experiencing a different life than I was experiencing, I didn't really want to be here. I didn't want a part of this. Like I felt like an unwilling participant in a show that I didn't sign up for. That was my entire childhood. And everything that I did for the rest of my life was based on my emotions around that. I started at a very young age setting things on fire, breaking things, stealing things. I started smoking cigarettes when I was 8 years old when I started smoking cigarettes. I was doing it. I I am from the youngest age just wanted to change the way that I felt. Adrenaline, fear, and substances changed the way that I felt. And I was drawn to that, and I did it as much as I could. The amount of things that I looked for to change the way that I felt was constant and ever changing. And it wasn't until I was in the fifth grade that I had my first drink, and it was the best thing that I ever had. And I knew that I needed to get more of it, and I knew that it needed to be a part of my life. I thought that my dad was silly for going to a place that didn't allow him to have this thing. But I was like 10 years old, so I couldn't really drink very much. So from 10 to 18, I spent my life trying to get fucked up in a system where I wasn't allowed to get fucked up, you know? And so I hung out with the kids that did drugs. I got kicked out of schools. I did a lot of bad shit, all just so that I could change the way that I felt. And I had this crazy amount of emotional turmoil that I had no tools for whatsoever. I didn't know what I was doing. I wasn't really great at making friends. I wasn't confident in any way. I just remember being terrified and hating everything. And it wasn't until I started hanging out with people that drank and smoked and did drugs that I felt like, maybe I could, get through life a little bit if I could do a little bit more of this. So my young days were super rocky just because, like, I found a solution that worked for me, which was getting fucked up. But I couldn't really have it whenever I wanted it. I had to beg people to buy me alcohol. I had to steal alcohol from people's parents. I had to, you know, buy drugs and get ripped off from high school drug dealers, which are the worst drug dealers ever. I made a serious mess of that. And then when I was 17, my dad relapsed. He had a really bad relapse on methamphetamine, which was a very interesting experience for me. Because at the time, I was like a little pothead, and me and him did not get along. And I'd never seen my dad drunk or touch anything. And then the next thing you know, I was coming home from school, and I was getting tackled away from the windows because I got to get away from the windows because the people out there are trying to come and get us. It was just a very bizarre scene, but I used it as an excuse to move out. And then I was finally free, and I left Midland and moved to San Antonio when I was 17 years old, and I got my own place, and I made a bunch of friends that weren't, of legal drinking age. And I had arrived. For the first time in my life, I could drink whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted, and no one was going to tell me that I couldn't. And I didn't have to sneak out of the house to do it. And I didn't have to, put mouthwash in my mouth and, hide anything. I got to do what I wanted to do, and it was perfect. It was everything that I ever wanted, and it worked for me, and it worked for me really, really well. I experimented with a lot of hard drugs. But I, alcohol was always the thing that I wanted the most, mainly because it's just like, I always knew what I was getting, and I could do it in public, and I didn't have to really fear like going to jail. Like, I could get drunk and make a mess of things, and like, that's socially acceptable. I didn't have to hide anywhere. And that was one of the great things that alcohol did for me, was like, it gave me the confidence that I never had. It took away the fear that I was constantly filled with. It introduced me to people that were cool and interesting and neat. And it made me feel cool and interesting and neat. And it was the solution, it was everything. And from that time forward, my life revolved around that being the center point of my life. I did a lot of things in San Antonio, Texas, but it was not a big enough place for me. And the walls were closing in on me because I was also at the time trying to sell drugs. And I was not a good drug dealer. And I decided to move to Los Angeles. So I moved to LA, on September 11th, 2001, the day of the September 11th attacks. That was a coincidence. I had just bought my plane ticket for that day. I was at the airport when the towers got hit, which is another thing. But I moved to Hollywood, enrolled myself in music business school because I was going to work in the music industry. And I started a band. We became really popular. I dropped out of school and experienced like the first bit of success that I'd ever had in my life. The band that I was in got a record deal, and we were the thing, you know? And, you know, Chris and I have related a lot about, parts of our story, but, you know, there was a moment where I was somebody that people wanted to talk to, and I was drinking and, touring and recording albums in the studios where my heroes had recorded albums and playing at venues where my heroes had played. And it seemed like I had everything. But I was really, really unhappy. And I had this emptiness inside of me, and everyone that I hung out with did cocaine and drank. And that's what I did. And I did more and more and more of it. And I had never even considered that there might be a problem with that. And at some point, I started to try. I had the desire for the first time in my life to not be drunk every day, about the time that I was 25 years old. And I was meeting people in Los Angeles that had healthy life, a healthy lifestyle. You know, they exercised. They woke up early. They read books. They did things that weren't staying up until 4 a.m, getting fucked up and sleeping all day. And that's all I did. And I wanted to try that. So that was the first time where I started to try to make an effort to not drink. It was the beginning of this, of the horrible ride that I would be on for the many years to come, where I would wake up and say, today, I'm not going to drink. I'm going to do something different. And every fucking night I got drunk and fucked up and felt ashamed. And at first, not ashamed. I was just like, man, that's weird. I wasn't going to drink yesterday. And here it is. I'm waking up. It's been a 3-day bender. All right. Well, tomorrow is the day that I'm not going to drink. And so I started that cycle. And this is when I really started to like, wait a second. My dad used to say that all the men in our family were alcoholics, and that if we drank, we couldn't stop drinking. But that's not me. But it's kind of started to connect. And at some point, my tour manager at the time, we were drunk one night, and I was like lamenting to him that I've been trying to not drink for like a long time, and that I was really miserable and I was really upset. And he said, hey, man, I used to go to AA. There's some really cool meetings here in Hollywood. You know, he name dropped some famous people and stoked my ego a little bit. And really I was like, oh, well, if cool famous people can go to AA, I could probably go too. I thought it was just like losers in Midland, Texas that hung out at the 710 Club where my dad used to go, you know? So my ego was curious. I was like, I'll go hang out with some other celebrities. And maybe that'll help me even get, you know, more successful in my own business. I didn't really think that I was an alcoholic. I wanted a break. I wanted a little bit of room to breathe. And I used to fantasize about going to treatment. Like I really, really, really wanted to go to treatment in California, but I couldn't afford it. But I had this fantasy that I would go to treatment once a year to detox. that was like one of my main goals.
So anyways, I went to AA in Hollywood and I didn't drink for 11 months. I got a sponsor and I was fucking miserable. I hated it. I didn't like the meetings. I didn't like the people. I didn't like the fellowship and I did not want to go to coffee with people. I stayed as far on the outside circle as you could possibly be. I did 90 and 90 because that's what was recommended to me in my first 90 days. And then after that, I went to one meeting a week. I did step 1 through 3 in written form and started working on my 4th step. But I didn't, I don't know. I hadn't reached a place where I thought that there was no other option for me. I thought that somehow I just hadn't tried enough things or put enough pieces together to be able to get a little space where I could handle not drinking on my own. Cause I didn't really want to be sober. I just wanted to drink less. That's all I wanted. I wanted to, you know, not drink when I didn't want to drink and drink when I wanted to drink, which was impossible for me. So I stayed sober for 11 months. I had a really bad day. I used to call my sponsor and just be like, fuck, this is bullshit. I'm miserable. I want to drink. Like I was the worst sponsee. All I ever did was call my sponsor to complain. And he would be like, well, why don't you, maybe you should work on your 4th step a little bit. And I'd be like, that's stupid. Like, why would I do that? That's not going to help. So, yeah. I was miserable and I just decided to drink. This wasn't working for me. And a part of me wrote a story in my head that I tried AA and it didn't work. I proved that it didn't work. And I went on to start, drinking again. It was amazing how quickly, you know, I'd done the 11 months of not drinking. I had, kind of my life had gotten better. I was a miserable fuck, but I, you know, I was healthier. My skin looked better. I was like showing up more with my bandmates. I was like performing better. There were like all these positives that I was getting and all that shit went away within weeks. Like I was right back where I started. And that's when I started to see this thing really get progressively worse for myself. A lot of the things that I hadn't checked off the list the first time that I went into AA over the years, check, you know, yep, falling asleep while driving, check, you know, holding my eye open and driving 30 minutes drunk and getting pulled over, check, you know, just one thing after another, stealing from people, check, so that I could drink more, stealing from work, check, getting fired from jobs, check. You know, my band breaking up because my attitude got out of control. So like things just kept getting worse and band broke up. I left LA. I pulled a geographical. I was like, LA and California is what is wrong. I'm going back to Texas where things made sense. So I moved back to Texas and my drinking got worse. My isolation got worse. I didn't go to parties to drink anymore. I just drank at home a lot. And, I only started hanging out with people that drank a lot that were, you know, my friends were people whose girlfriends would call me and be like, hey, I just found like 9 bottles stashed around our apartment. Like, do you know why he's drinking so much? And I'd be like, I have no idea. But, you know, I had 9 bottles smashed around my apartment too. So that's kind of where I was going. And the cycle continued. I was living, in San Antonio at the time and I decided I needed to move to Austin. I was too isolated. There weren't enough people like me that I knew. I needed to move to Austin. So it was more like LA and there were cooler people. And my drinking just got worse and my drinking just got worse. And like I had a job where I was like making some money, but then I would make a little bit of money and then I would like stop working and they would just, you know,
I would disappear, and then I'd come back and be like, hey, I need to work again. And they'd be like, okay, that's fine. So I just like make some money, drink for weeks, run out of money, go work some more, drink for weeks, run out of money, go work some more. And that's all I was doing. And I was fucking miserable. And at some point I started calling my old sponsor in LA, and he would tell me to go, maybe I should go to a meeting. I'll call him drunk, at 2 a.m. my time, and he would answer. The guy answered my phone calls still years later. And we would have a really deep conversation. We'd talk about all my shit, and then he'd be like, you're going to go to a meeting tomorrow? And I'd be like, no, I'm not. And that continued for a while. Eventually I couldn't take it anymore. I thought that I wanted to die is what I wanted. You know, there was nothing keeping me here. You know, I had nothing tying me to this place. It would have been easy to kill myself. But the reality is like I couldn't, you know, killing, you know, I don't want to say I'm a coward, but you know, I was willing to go to AA rather than kill myself. And I didn't want to go to AA. And so, I looked up the latest meeting in Austin, which was the 10:30 Westlake meeting. And I went when I was drunk. And I stood up in the back of the room and I said that I had a problem and I cried my eyes out and I left and I kept drinking for 3 more weeks. And cause I was like, I can't do this. I can't hang out in that room. My life can't be that room. You know, I was just convinced that if I tried AA, my life was over. That I'd never have fun again, that I'd never enjoy life. That I was essentially sending myself to prison, and prison was that Westlake clubhouse, the same prison that my dad was a member of when I was growing up, a clubhouse down the street where a bunch of drunks hung out, and that, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of cool shit happening, at least not from the outside viewer's perspective. Luckily I got desperate enough to go back to that meeting. I went back to that meeting and I met a guy, and it was really lucky. I met this guy that went there that night. It was his first night at a meeting in a long time. He was picking up a 6 or 7 year chip, and he didn't really go to meetings that much, but we connected and we talked, and he gave me his number, and it was one of those weird things, right place, right time. But, you know, it was his first meeting in a long time, but he was like, if you come back here tomorrow, I'll come back here tomorrow. And I said, okay, I will. His name, I won't say his name, but he was a touring musician here in Austin, that, you know, we related, you know, he knew my band. I knew kind of his stuff. And I was like, whoa, you go, like, maybe we could be friends. And, so he kind of like helped me right there in that time. He committed to me. He said, I'll start going to this meeting every night if you go with me. And I went. And I didn't learn until later that he didn't go to meetings anymore. He literally just did that for me. He saw that I was struggling, and he was willing to like help me out and be there and like be by my side. And I'm forever grateful to that guy. But that was the last time that I drank. I came into these rooms and my life has started to change over the last 8 years in ways that it's hard for me to explain, and definitely in ways that I could have never imagined at the time. So I was convinced that I was going there to give up my life, that I was going there to stop myself from putting a gun in my mouth, and that there was no more fun. There were no more cool people. You know, girls weren't going to like me. I wasn't going to get to go to parties or events or concerts. I just had this really stupid idea that life would be over. And I'm glad that I was wrong about that. It took me a while. You know, Westlake 10:30 meeting at that time, apparently there had been some violence and some gunshots right before then. And it was a very, there was not very many people there. The 10:30 Westlake meeting had like five people that went to it regularly. And, it didn't really make me feel like, wow, this is my people. There's this whole fun life to be living. But luckily I found a meeting here in Austin that, was filled with life and, people that I identified with and people that I wanted to hang out with and to be like, and people that were my tribe. And, you know, that was 1313. I think I was, somewhere in my first 2 months when I found that meeting. And it's been my home group ever since. You know, I did 90 and 90, again that time. I committed to it. And I really like, for the first time, I was willing to look at like my experience in AA the first time. And I had told this story and I believed it that I tried this program and it did not work for me. And it took me probably a year to really admit that I did not try this program. I did not try it at all. I did not take the first step. I did not really do a second or third step. And I definitely didn't do a fourth step or any of the steps that followed. I did not get into the center of this program. I stood on the outside and wanted you to push me out. I wanted this to not work. And this time, I don't know. There was something in me that said, if you do this 100% and it doesn't work, then you can go and crawl in your bottle and you can die and that's that. But if it does work, maybe there's something else, you know? And that was, for me, the first time that I had a spiritual experience was like really feeling something greater than myself, pushing me to say, hey, just fucking try it, man. What do you have to lose? Just give it a shot. And I did. I went all in, you know. Chris can attest to the fact that, like, I went from the guy with his arms folded, angry, sitting on the outside, not talking to anybody, to I took the greeter position for, like, 6 months straight. I shook every person's hand and learned everyone's name. And still to this, like, I remember I years sober and I had a sponsee and he was like, I just don't understand how everyone here knows you. And it's like, cause I've shook all their fucking hands like so many times. Like, and just because I did, I was just like, I'm going to know everyone. Like, I'm not going to be the guy that knows one person. I'm going to fucking shake everyone's hand. I'm going to know their names. I'm going to ask them about themselves. And when they say, hey, do you want to go to dinner afterwards? I'm going to say yes, every time. And every time that I want to say no, which is almost all of the time, I'm going to say yes instead. And that decision changed my fucking life because I started to be a part of something that was not about my ego and it wasn't about my pocketbook and it wasn't about me getting ahead in the world. It was about me being part of a community that was just trying to help each other and get each other to move a little bit forward in whatever it was that we were trying to do in life. And, it moved mountains for me, spiritually, emotionally, in my relationships. And I started sponsoring guys, after I had a year. My first sponsee is still sober to this day. I don't sponsor him anymore, but he's a friend of mine now. And I don't sponsor very much, but, you know, it was a big part of, my early sobriety. I've done a lot of things in those first couple of years of sobriety that I see a lot of people do. It's like I felt like I was given a new opportunity at life, and then I got a chance to like figure out what the fuck my place is in the world, you know? And I had this safe like sounding board where I could say, you know, I'm going to try this. I'm going to take a couple classes at ACC. And then there's four other people that are like, I'm taking classes at ACC too. And we can like talk about our struggles and what's happening. And like, it was an incredible growth experience for me, this community of people that weren't drinking, that were trying to expand their spiritual practice, and that they were out there in the world trying to practice these principles in all of their affairs and live a good life, a big, full life. And we got to come in every day and be like, hey, today fucking sucked. How's your day going? And I needed that. I still need it. The thing that I really realized when I was drinking and that I still identify with is this classic notion that I have no defense against the first drink and I have an allergy of the body. I know it. If I take a drink, I don't know what I'm going to do. Right. Maybe I'm going to have four. Maybe I'm going to have 20. I don't know. I can't tell you. And not having a defense against the first drink, I had to find this program. So the fellowship is what saved my life. And the fourth step was this treasure map for me, where I got to trace all of this shit, and every single one led for me to something that I was afraid of. And this crippling fear that had been following me since I was a kid, I now get to look at these things and dig deeper into shedding light on all this fear that made me want to drink and made me want to get out of my skin and made me want to push the world away. There's a lot of people that I would tell some truths to, but not the whole truth. Maybe I'd tell you the truth about something, but I'd lie about something else. Maybe I'd tell you about this thing, but I never sat down and talked to one person about all of my shit. And have that same person look at me and go, cool. Anything else? You know? And made me feel like, whoa, I've been carrying this shit around. And it's not, like, I'm not a fucking horrible person. You know? That was a freeing thing. So, yeah. I don't know. I got sober just because I didn't want to fucking kill myself. And I stayed sober because of the people and because of these steps. After a little while of being sober in Austin, I got a job in Denver, and I had to leave here. And the last couple years, last five, 6 years, have been kind of rocky for me in my recovery, because my home group was here and I felt safe here, and I moved to Denver. And I thought that everything was going to be the same, and I had a real difficult time connecting with the program in Denver. I had a real hard time. My job demanded more from me than I'd ever given. I spent all of my time working and way less of my time on AA. I went from going to 3 meetings a week to like 1 meeting a week to 1 meeting every other week to 1 meeting a month. You know, I was still hanging out with sober people, but I stopped. I didn't have a sponsor anymore. I got real picky about who could sponsor me. And I was like, hey man, I can't find any good sponsors in Denver. There's only like a million sober people here. There's no good sponsors for me. And so I started to step farther and farther away from this program as my life got bigger and bigger as a result of this program. And it took me a while to really feel the effects of that. I think that putting my job over my sobriety, it made it easy to not want to drink because I was just busy all the time. I was a workaholic. I became consumed with my job. And eventually, I realized that it wasn't sustainable. I realized I didn't feel like I was going to drink, but my life's quality had shrunk drastically compared to how it was when I was like tied into this thing and I was doing it every day. And I'm a selfish person. Like, I'm not going to go to AA if it's not making my life better. I'm just not. Like, if I'm not feeling better and more connected and like seeing positive results from something, I'm not going to do it. I just won't. The only reason that I keep coming back to AA is because when I do it, my life gets better every time. And if it didn't, then I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't keep coming back. I'm selfishly motivated and driven. I ended up moving back here a year and a half ago and making some serious changes to my work-life commitments and plugging back in to AA and making it a bigger part of my life. It's not as big a part of my life as when I first got sober and didn't really have a job and could go to 5 meetings a week and sponsor 4 guys and all of that stuff. But AA is at the center of my life. I ended up, from my experience as being in a band, being asked to be a tour manager. So I've spent the last 4 years, traveling around the world, putting on concerts, and music festivals. And it's been an incredible gift for me because, I have personally, helped 5 people get sober that were not trying to get sober. They just saw me operating in the world as an honest, caring person that didn't drink, and it was attractive to them. And over time, they were like, "What are you doing? Because I can't stop drinking." I never preached to anybody. I never did it. I just showed up in the world, and I've gone all over the place, and I've been an ambassador to what life can look like when you're not drinking, whether it's with AA or not. Like, living a life without alcohol and drugs is not a miserable life. It doesn't have to be. So I've had the ability to do that. And then this last year, I'll just touch on a little bit of what my life is like right now, but, I kind of reached the pinnacle of like my dream job, making more money than I'd ever made, traveling around the world, doing really cool stuff. And, then we hit, COVID hit and, my industry is gone. My job's gone. I've been I'm a workaholic that hasn't worked in 8 months, which is not a fun thing, for me. And I've had to really, really like come to terms with some things that I was really good at avoiding because I worked a lot. Like I cut my workload down, when I moved back here to try and, get a little bit more of a work-life balance, but I still, was traveling like 6 months out of the year. And, it made it really easy for me to not commit to a lot of things. Made it really easy for me to not commit to relationships, not commit to sponsoring people, not commit to, a lot of stuff. And, so I've been in this really amazing place of growth these last 8 months, where I get to kind of, focus on what's really important to me, because job or no job, Like, I still can have a big, cool life. And I don't have a job right now. And my life's pretty good. You know, I have some really good people in it. I have a really strong community still. I have expanded my spiritual practice to a place that I didn't even know was possible. And I didn't even really want to have. I've never really big in, I never really did meditation. And prayer was always just something that I kind of like threw out there, but I didn't really think I was praying to anything in particular, but I just kind of was paying it lip service. And my spiritual life has been hugely, improved over the last 8 months. Cause I really sat down and I'm like, look, you don't have a job. You can't go anywhere. You can't go to meetings. You can't do this. What can you do? You can work on your connection with your higher power. You can sit and really try to connect, and expand your spiritual experience. And I can call other alcoholics. I call people all the time. It's hugely important for me because it helps me to not feel so alone. And it helps me to know that like I'm helping other people to not feel so alone during these times. And I've been spending a lot of time in 6 and 7, which are like two of my favorite, places to be. Because, you know, without humility, it's hard for me to walk through the world and do anything properly. If I'm not coming to it from a place of like me not being the most important person in the room, you know, cause if I think that I'm the most important person in the room, I'm probably going to fuck something up. I'm going to think about myself more than I think about anybody else. So I don't know. That's almost 40 minutes. I really have no idea what else I could say.
Thanks. Great job, Taylor.
It really was.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for speaking.
Yeah.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Much as you didn't want to do it.
I know, right?
That's,
great job.